The design arguments, the argument that the universe looks as if it has been arranged and planned by a designer. So the question is, how do we detect design, or why would we think that something has been designed? Well, if you go to the beach and you just see the sand arranged in sand dunes, you don't think the designer has been at work. But if you see sand sculptures, and some people have perfected this art of making sand sculptures. So if you look at, for example, elaborate sand castles, you would know a designer has been at work. Or even if somebody has been arranging the sand in, for example, this sort of abstract modern art, you would take a look at the beach and you would know, listen, somebody has been at work here. There's been a designer at work. There's a plan. Or if you go into your brother or sister's house or room in the house and you find a pile of Lego just lay strewn over the floor, no particular order, you know there hasn't been a plan about. The child has just lifted a box of Lego and thrown it over the floor. But if you came into the room and found, for example, a human figure built out of Lego, or if you found that the Lego blocks have been arranged in a way that the Lego could be used as a tool or as a decoration, or even if you were to find the Lego arranged, again, in these sort of abstract art forms, you might know exactly what it is that somebody has been making with the Lego, but you would know there's been a plan here. Somebody has designed this. Somebody has arranged this. So you can tell a designer has been at work when you can see a pattern, when you can see order, when you can see structure, when there didn't need to be any, when there shouldn't have been any, when you just expect to find something random or something chaotic and you find order and structure that could be used by someone, when you find order and structure that's been shaped for use, or when you find order and structure that brings about some value. So, for example, you can find order and structure that might be very, very beautiful, or that might be very, very interesting. Then you think, well, a designer's been at work here, an agent's been at work, somebody's had a plan here. So detecting design is very easy. Even if you don't know exactly what was going through the designer's head when they made the structure, you can think, well, yeah, a designer's been at work here. Now, what we find in the natural world around us when we look at nature is an incredible amount of beauty and design and structure. The universe in which we live is vast. Not just our planet, but the universe itself. You know, traveling at the speed of light, it would take millions and billions of years to get across our galaxy. But in galaxies that we've just been able to see in the last decades, we see incredible beauty. We can go under the ocean, deep under the ocean, and you can see jellyfish and all sorts of creatures which glow in the dark, beautiful colours. Everywhere we look, we see this incredible order, this incredible complexity. And it just looks, even on something like the rainbow, it just looks as if a designer's been at work. There's our old friend, the bacterial flagellum. And that's the little propeller that moves bacteria. And the incredible thing about this little machine is it can move at 10,000 RPM. 10,000 RPM, rotations per minute. And it can stop spinning on a quarter turn and start spinning in the other direction. Or at least some of them can do that. They don't all go at that speed, but some do. And again, looking at that, a lot of people have looked at things like the bacterial flagella and said, right, look, there's a machine. There must have been a designer. Well, people who don't believe in God have got an answer to that. And here's a fellow, Richard Dawkins, who's written a book called The God Delusion. He had written a number of books before that. And he says, look, these machines, these animals, yes, I can understand why somebody would look at those and say, oh, they must have been designed. But Charles Darwin and scientists who came after him have discovered evolution. And they've worked out how evolution works. And that explains why you've got all these animals in the universe. That explains why there's life in the universe. So his argument would partly be evolution explains why there's design. You don't need a designer if you've got evolution. Well, does that answer the argument? If you were to walk into the room and you were to find that your brother or sister had been making Lego in, and you were to find a man making himself out of Lego, or you were to find Lego little contraptions that made little Lego devices, that made other Lego devices, that made other Lego devices, you would say that quite a lot of design is going into that Lego. You wouldn't say we don't need a designer. You would say, well, Lego have come up with some very interesting products now that can make themselves. Evolution doesn't really answer the argument from design. Long before Charles Darwin, there was a guy called Thomas Aquinas, a medieval monk, very intelligent guy, wrote a lot of books. And basically one of his arguments was, he says, look at the way the world organizes itself. Look at the patterns in nature. The world just organizes itself. You see, you plant an acorn, and you know it always becomes an oak tree. And it always grows according to certain patterns and certain rules. He says, nature is full of mindless things that act as if they have a purpose. If you look at atoms, if you look at electrons, protons, neutrons, the things that make up atoms, they don't have minds in them. They don't have brains in them. But they all act according to rules, according to purpose. And you find these systems right the way throughout nature. So, for example, you get weather systems, you know, water cycles. All these subjects that you do in school, you know, food chains. Every subject you do, you're going to find time and time again these systems and nature just organizing itself according to pattern, to a pattern. And evolution, natural selection, is just another instance of that. With evolution, what has to happen for evolution to work is that you have to have animals that reproduce with slight variation. You have to have animals that have children that are just a little bit like, or just very like them, but a little bit off, and then you can get selection going to work. Evolution is not chaos. It's not completely chaotic. It's not random. That's something that Richard Dawkins insists upon himself. It's just another one of those ordered processes. So you don't get rid of the designer by saying there's evolution, because that just pushes you back to the question, well, why does this ordered process exist in the world? Why do we live in a world in which natural selection can produce these wonderful creatures? The universe didn't have to be like that. How come we live in that universe? As a matter of fact, for evolution to work at all, you need things like stars, you need planets, you need galaxies. It can't happen in a vacuum. You need a very particular kind of universe. As a matter of fact, you can think about it in terms of a bread machine. You know, if a bread machine's going to work, it has to be very precisely constructed. It has to be operated correctly. You've got to put the right ingredients in. You've got to get the right amount of yeast in, the right amount of gluten, the right amount of water. Otherwise, what comes out of the bread machine is something like a hockey puck. I don't know if you've ever seen unleavened bread or bread that hasn't been made with yeast, but you could throw it in a riot or in a discus event. I mean, it's tough stuff. So to make good bread in a bread machine, you've got to get the right ingredients in a well-constructed machine that's operated properly. Then when we look at our universe, it's set up in just the right way for evolution to work. Evolution can't even start unless you've got a very, very precisely organized universe. To give you an idea of just how organized, you're all certainly used to now this picture of an atom with protons, neutrons in the middle, electrons going around the outside. Isn't exactly what an electron or an atom looks like. We actually can't picture in our minds what these atoms look like. But it works for science for helping us explain why these atoms can join together to make different molecules. And different molecules can come together to make cells. They can come together to make basically everything that you see. So unless atoms are arranged in exactly the right way, they can't link together. And this is really important. Unless atoms are arranged according to very specific laws, We're not going to get anything on our universe. The atoms of the universe won't be able to make anything. So, for example, unless there were very special types of laws called quantization laws, electrons should just go right down into the center, into the nucleus. Yet those are the very things that have to link together, that, you know, have to link up for molecules to be made. If it wasn't for something called the Pauli exclusion principle, all of the electrons would fall right into that lowest orbital, right near the nucleus, and you wouldn't be able to get complex chemistry. Now, you don't need to know exactly what all these laws mean. The bottom line is this: if the laws of nature weren't set up correctly, atoms couldn't link together to make molecules. You couldn't have complex chemistry. That means you don't get life. It means you don't even get anything as basic as water. You have to have a very precisely organized universe with very precise laws to get anything as complex as water. We tend to think of water as really simple. But you actually need very, very precise laws of nature to even get that much. The other interesting thing about nature is the odds against this happening. If you look at the atom, in the middle you're going to get your protons and your neutrons. Now, stars are powered through nuclear fusion with these atoms coming together. Now, if you were to increase the mass of the neutrons by 1/700, increase it 1/700, stars would not be able to burn. No stars, no life. 1/700, just that slight increase, and you're not going to get stars to burn. The other thing about protons in that nucleus, those protons should all fly apart. But they're held together by something called the strong nuclear force. It's a very strong force that holds them together in the nucleus of an atom. Now, if it was not there, we would have no atoms in our entire universe. No atoms, and you can't make anything at all. But that nuclear force, if you were to turn it down by just 50%, just by half, you wouldn't have anything in our entire universe apart from hydrogen. So you just turn that down by 50%, there's no life, no animals, nothing that evolution can work on. To give you an idea too, what we want to look at here is the range of forces that are at work in our universe. You're used to forces, you'll be hearing these a lot in science, and at one extreme you've got gravity, which is weak, and then at the other extreme we've got that strong nuclear force, which we've just mentioned, and there's others in and around the middle, like electromagnetism. Now, gravity is 10 to the 40 times weaker than the strong nuclear force. Now, to give you an idea of what that means that the strong nuclear force is 10,000 billion, 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 billion times stronger than gravity. 10,000 billion, 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 billion times stronger than gravity. So if you can imagine stretching a dial across, imagine a dial on a radio. It's the way you tune into your radio, and you've got to move the dial to exactly the right space to get your channel. So you take your radio and you're going to move your dial. Now, if you were using a dial like that to set the force of gravity, and you were to increase the strength of gravity by 1/10^34, so that fraction is 1 in 1 with 34 zeros after it. If you were just to move your dial that much in terms of gravity, you basically couldn't get anything much bigger than bacteria on most planets. You're just going to crush life.
you're not going to get any life at all. So just the slightest wee change in the force of gravity out of all the ranges that it could be, you're going to, just the slightest wee change out of all the values that that gravity could have had, just knock that dial one tiny wee bit, and you're just going to crush life across the universe. So what you call the fine-tuning argument, and you can think of it like this. You've got different forces in the universe. We just mentioned electromagnetism. You've got to have gravity. You've got the strong nuclear force. There's something called the cosmological constant, which makes, basically means space is expanding. You've got to get these things set up very, very, very precisely to get a universe that can have life in it. You've got to have it set up very precisely, even just to get a universe with stars and planets. You know, something as basic as that. It's got to be set up really, really precisely. So imagine that you have got to play a tune from an orchestra. Say something by Beethoven. But you have this exercise where you've got maybe a dozen different radios. And one radio, you've got to find one station that's got the brass section. You've got to find another station that's got the violins. You've got to find another station that's got the piano. You've got another station that's got the drums. There's a different instrument playing on different radio stations. And you've got to tune the radios in to exactly the right station to get the drums playing at the right place. You've got to tune into exactly the right station to get the violins playing so that you get the whole orchestra. You've got to tune it in. What I want you to imagine is this. The odds of getting that right. Imagine that you had a target as big as the Milky Way, the galaxy that we live in. And in that Milky Way, there's one target which is 1/1,000,000,000th of an inch across. There's a physicist called Robin Collins, and he says it's like this. He says, to get all those dials set exactly right is like somebody firing a shot at a target in the Milky Way that is 1/1,000,000,000th of an inch across. That's how accurate you have to be to get a universe that can have life in it. That's the level of accuracy you have to have. It's like picking a needle out of a haystack. You're imagining a needle that is 1/1,000,000,000th of an inch in a haystack that's the size of the Milky Way, which is vast. You don't get that right by chance. If you walked into a room with a number of different radios playing, and each radio was tuned into a station, an individual station, and one station was playing the violins from the orchestra, another station was playing the piano from the orchestra, another station was playing the percussion section, another station playing the brass, and each station was tuned in exactly right so that you could hear a whole orchestra playing a musical piece exactly, perfectly, correctly. You wouldn't think that a child had wandered in and hit all the stations by accident and just happened to come up with that. You would know that somebody had set the room up in such a way so that they could hear the orchestra play. Now, it's the same with the universe. For there to be any life in our universe, somebody has to have set the conditions perfectly. Well, we'll come back to our friend Richard Dawkins, and his answer is, well, who designed God? He said, okay, it looks like the universe has got a designer. It looks like somebody set the universe up. He says, but that doesn't answer anything, because he says we can ask who designed God. He says, any brain that designed this universe, or any computer that designed this universe, would have to be just as complicated as the universe itself, or more complicated. So his answer is, okay, you say the universe is designed. Who designed God? That's his answer. Well, the problem is that computers and brains are made out of things. But God isn't made out of anything. That's the whole point of God. God isn't made out of anything because God is the creator. He just actually hasn't understood what Christians are talking about when they talk about God. God is unlimited personal power. Now, we all know exactly what those terms mean. While it might be difficult to picture God or to imagine what God is like, we can understand the idea of God very easily because it uses terms that we use every day. So, for example, personal power is something that we all have. We all have conscious experience of the world around us. We all have awareness. We have the knowledge that that brings. And we have the ability to make choices, the freedom of will to choose. And that's what it means to have personal power, to have awareness and the power to choose. And God simply has those things without limits. God is a personal power without limits. We're limited by our bodies. We're limited because we're finite creatures. God does not have those limits. So the idea of God, a personal power who is only confined by the laws of logic, by the rules of logic, is actually easy to understand. There's no great mystery there. Well, are there any other options that we have for dealing with the evidence for design? Are there any other routes that an atheist could take? Well, one route that an atheist could take is to say that perhaps this universe is infinitely large. So if you consider somebody hitting the keys on a typewriter at random, imagine a monkey doing that. It's just sitting in front of a typewriter, hitting the keys at random. Occasionally, it will make a word just by accident. It'll hit the letters T, H, E and space just by accident. Now, it hasn't intended to create a word, but just given enough time and the right opportunity, one might pop up. And the idea of saying that the universe is infinitely large is like giving the monkey an infinite amount of time. Sooner or later, it's not just going to hit words by accident, it's going to make sentences by accident, it's going to make paragraphs by accident. If you give it an infinitely long amount of time, if you give it an infinite amount of time, it's going to be able to create whole books by accident. Well, maybe the universe is like that. Maybe the universe is infinite, and all these particles are out there shifting around at random. And just every so often in this universe, we find these tiny little corners that look designed but haven't been. It's all just come together by accident in an infinitely large universe. Two problems with that immediately spring to mind. One is, well, if this universe had come together by accident, it's just so immensely complex. It seems much more likely that we would be living in a universe with maybe one star, maybe one planet circling around it, and that's all we'd need to see things. But we see much, 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 much more design than that. So there seems much more design in the part of the universe we can see than to say this all came together by accident in an infinitely large universe. And the second problem with it is that we could explain any difficult fact that way. So imagine that you look out the window one morning and you see somebody walking across water. And you go and you check with eyewitnesses and you find out that this person claimed he was a prophet sent by God and he was walking on water, and this miracle was to prove that he was sent by God. If you were to say to people, well, listen, you shouldn't believe that because we live in an infinitely large universe in which every possible event will happen sooner or later, and that man has probably just gotten lucky because in this infinitely large universe, many people are attempting to walk on water somewhere or other, and he just happens to be the guy who's gotten lucky. At that stage, the person is going to say to you, listen, that might technically be possible, but I would imagine that such things are still much more likely to happen by design. Such things are much more likely to happen when a God is behind them than by chance. It's a poor explanation just to multiply the size of the universe to deal with any inconvenient fact. That said, some scientists have come up with ideas to deal with the constants of nature. Remember, we said that the value of gravity needs to be very, very precisely chosen for life to exist in this universe. Well, some scientists have produced different ideas of different models of the universe where universes can create each other, or where universes can be created out of something called an inflaton field. And these multiverse models partly are attractive to some scientists because they get rid of this idea they think of the fine-tuning of the constants. But again, the difficulty is when you look at these models, they need quite a bit of fine-tuning themselves. So for example, in one model called the self-reproducing inflationary universe, which thankfully you don't need to understand, and thankfully I don't need to understand, But what we find when we look at it and you begin to question it is that you need something to supply the energy in that model. You need something to convert the energy into the mass and the energy we see in our universe. But most of all, you need the right set of laws for that multiverse model to work. So even when we seem to get rid of design in one area, it always seems to pop up in another. So the design argument is very clear. The universe looks designed because it has been designed. There's a mind behind the universe, and that's an idea that we are familiar with. It's something that we understand. We know from our own experience that our minds can create others, can create order. We know from observing others that their minds can create order. So the simplest way to account for the order that we see in our universe is to say that there's a mind behind it.